Welcome to the Horror Babble Originals podcast. Prunes by C.P. Howard. Journal found in a deserted bothy in the Outer Hebrides. April 17. They say that to keep a journal is to keep one's sanity. I do hope that's true. Stationed here, alone, 4 weeks and counting, and I'm losing my marbles. I'm sorry, Emery. One cannot possibly be alone in your company. Emery, I must add, is my feline companion here at the lighthouse. He's black, black as midnight, property of the corporation. You see, watchmen such as me are no longer permitted to work in pairs or groups. Trouble follows. Folie à deux, they say. Paranoia, mania. But a lone watchman and a corporation cat, that ought to be sufficient. We'll see about that, won't we? I've never been much of a diarist. I don't really have the aptitude for it. I'm a technician. I observe. Adept analysis doesn't allow for superfluous deviation. But I'll try. Try to put it all down. My thoughts. My feelings. If for no other reason than to pass the time. The dreadful, monotonous time. Again, I'm sorry, Emery, but conversation with you is very one-sided. I'm unable to interpret your incessant purring, calming though it might be. As I said, I've been here for over a month. Arrived March 20. Relieved my predecessor and his cat, and went about the business of applying the personal touches a studious watchman requires. The lighthouse stands on a rocky outcrop, or quay, just half a mile from the island. They say that it has been here for a long time. Centuries. I don't know about that. But the island, I'm hesitant to name it here, has been here for millennia. It projects from the sea like a cluster of cathedral spires, woefully barren, and topped with ice. It's the reason I'm here. The reason my predecessors were here. And the cause, no doubt, of the trouble I mentioned earlier. Sitting by the window in the watchroom, which is up on level 3, Emery at my feet, fire in the stove, the island ogles me with shimmering, hostile eyes. If it wasn't for the money, I wouldn't be here. But the money is good. Very good. It has to be, all things considered. Still, I'd rather not be here. I miss the warmth of the sun and the cafes along the promenade. I'm a people watcher at heart, observing the comings and goings of strangers as they order a cappuccino and read a book, or gaze longingly at the sapphire waters. The latter I can do at least. The ocean is all about me, a vast desert, flat and expansive. Astonishing, really. April 19. Cats are sensitive creatures. It was the marked change in Emery's behavior that alerted me to the onset of the blizzard last night. We were in the watchroom, some 50 meters above the waters below, when suddenly my feline companion approached me and proceeded to brush up against me fitfully. A distant wail followed, accompanied by the unmistakable but initially sporadic pitter-patter of hailstones against the north window. The storm proper wasn't far behind, bearing down on the lighthouse with great rapidity. Emery became quite twitchy, emitting a low yowl, trotting back and forth by my feet, demanding attention. This I gave him, as the hail, robust and pitiless, continued its assault. The invisible wind howled ceaselessly, not to be hindered by the minuscule lighthouse in its path. We hunkered down, Emery and I, my gaze fixed on the north window, praying to God that the thick glass would remain intact. Eventually my prayers were answered. The blizzard passed over us and left us in peace, fading like a whirling wraith in the southern gloom. The night sky thereafter cleared, revealing the sparkling stars in all their glory. The aurora borealis danced a dim waltz, sage green and crimson red. But little comfort did these things provide, for the clearing of the skies could lead to only one thing, a drop in temperature. And the drop was dramatic. On waking this morning, the temperature outside had plummeted to -20°C, and now the key is surrounded by a circle of ice, a circle that is expanding hour by hour. This troubles me greatly, for the waters between the lighthouse and the island are exceedingly calm. If the water continues to freeze... April 20. In spite of my fears, the routine continues. Rise at dawn, feed the fire. Feed Emery, feed myself. Survey the light. Firewood is plentiful, but limited, so I burn it sparingly. I'm here till June 20, so I must eat sparingly too. The lower of the two stores, the stores being at ground level and level one respectively, contains fuel for the light. This hefty supply, I'm told, is enough to power the light for a decade. But my primary duty is that of the watch. We watch the island, but we don't ask questions. Those who ask questions are not qualified for the watch. It's that simple. We're paid to take care of the lighthouse and to keep our eyes on that strange atoll. We speculate, privately nowadays, knowing the fates of our predecessors, our conjecture stemming from hushed exchanges over foaming ales in seafront bars. Former watchmen speak of shadows and spectres, piping and moans, bright lights and thunderous booms, all confined to the island. These observations are to be recorded minutely, later handed over to the corporation for further study. I've seen neither hide nor hair of such things myself. Heard only the faint whistle of the northerly wind as it blows through the tallest crags of that barren rock. Eerie though it is, I'm continually reassured by the stable disposition of my feline companion. Emery will know before I if strangeness is abroad. The circle of ice surrounding the quay continues to grow. To the north there's the suggestion now of a white pathway, a bridge of ice forming between the lighthouse and the island. Tomorrow morning, I'll brave the terrible cold and test the integrity of that ice. April 21. Lunchtime. Emery and I are in the watchroom, filling our bellies. My feline companion purrs contentedly, which pleases me. As for my activities earlier this morning, I donned my furs and went out at about 10 a.m. It was appallingly cold. The steep descent to the circle of ice below would have been treacherous in anything less than snow boots. Numerous pokes and prods assured me that the water was indeed frozen solid. The bridge of ice I mentioned, which leads directly to the island, is surely traversable. This fact bothers me tremendously, for it has been speculated that some of my predecessors never returned from their watches. Some, it is said, were simply absent from their posts when their successors came to relieve them. Watchers, or the watched? I could head over there, I suppose, traverse that white pathway and look for evidence of foul play. No, not a snowflake's chance in hell. My primary duty, and this I must continue to remind myself, is to observe. I'm sure Emery wouldn't encourage such a move. Perhaps that's another reason why the corporation actively discourages pairings nowadays. A like-minded individual might have been able to convince me that it was a good idea to explore the island, and that the secrets kept by the corporation were worth knowing. I don't know about that, but there are two sides to this coin. If that bridge of ice is traversable, then it is traversable in both directions. Emery has finished his lunch. Nothing remains of that plate of chicken chunks. I'd better get back to my sandwich. Too distracted, Seems I'm getting the hang of this diary business. Later. And so it begins. I want to put it down to my imagination. In fact, I'm certain it was just my imagination. For Emery remained asleep as I stood at the north window, gazing towards the island. But there were lights over there, shapes that danced above the topmost crags, all colours. Greens and blues were followed by reds and yellows, rising and falling above the peaks, like the souls of buried jesters, juggled by invisible hands of air. And there were shadows, swirling forms that seemed to emerge from the very rock, like sea smoke rising from warm water, descending the precipitous cliffs in quest of the frozen waters below. I pinched myself. Not a dream, a majestic fantasy, but quite ghastly in its frenetic garishness. I watched for no more than 10 minutes before the illusion faded, and reluctantly I committed the details of my sighting to the watchman's logbook. I was plain with my words, matter of fact, compared the dancing shapes to the northern lights, the sneaking shadows to a trick of the light. And I left out my feelings, the powerful sense of dread that the appearance of those strange things stirred in me. I've never experienced gloom before, nothing like melancholy. But the onset of that weird spectacle brought about an overwhelming bleakness that held me in its terrible grip, a trance-like state that promised only sorrow and doom. I'm in bed now, the bedroom being situated on level 2, the lantern at my side flickering wanly, hopelessly dull, compared with those things that danced above the island. Emery will be in shortly. I eagerly await dawn, the inevitability of the sunrise that serves to remind one that all is well, that everything is as it should be, normal, ordinary. But as I lie here in this cold bed, the faint whistle of the night wind, the only sound, I'm plagued by the memory of those queer shadows seeking the white pathway, smoky tendrils reaching, probing. What were they looking for? April 22. It's early, and I've still duties to perform this morning, but this couldn't wait. I was on my way to procure firewood for the stove, when I was nudged by Emery. It seemed that my feline companion, yet again, was trying to get my attention, and, furthermore, seemed intent on guiding me to the main door on the ground floor. Down we went, and once there, I unlocked it and pulled it open. The chill air that rushed in to greet me was biting. It's very difficult to describe just how cold it is up here. I've experienced my fair share of extreme weather, during several winters in the Tiger. But this place is something else. Cold with purpose is one way of putting it. A cold that has something to say, something of great importance. But there was something else out there waiting for me this morning. Emery emitted that low yowl of his, only the second time he'd done so. A series of footprints were visible in the compacted snow, leading right up to the door. Not my steps from the day before. These were narrow prints, made by slender booted feet. Donning my furs, I stepped outside, ignoring the cat's hiss of disapproval. I followed the steps all the way to the ice bridge, by way of which this mysterious, slender-footed stranger had undoubtedly come. But that's where I stopped. I hadn't the energy or the will to attempt to go any further. So, what's going on here? Is the island inhabited by an elusive, slender-footed race? Or were the curious footprints made by an arctic bipedal beast of some description? I scratched my head as I returned to the shelter of the lighthouse, pausing on the threshold, as the realization that the prince of the nocturnal wanderer had come in only one direction disturbed my train of thought. I've just now completed a thorough search of the lighthouse on the lookout for wispy interlopers. Emery's demeanour suggests that we're alone. But the fact that, prior to the discovery of the prince, the cat was aware of the presence of something outside vexes me as I write. Time to fetch some wood. Stoke the fire. A cup of coffee might settle my nerves. What do you think, Emery? Later. I'm puzzled, and no closer to an answer concerning who or what came to the door this morning. But Emery's disposition now tells me that something is amiss. He wouldn't touch the food I put out for him. And whenever I approach the north window, he yowls frantically. I've taken to talking to him now, like a true colleague, hopeful that in so doing I'll work out a means by which to construe his behaviour. When he's close to me, he settles somewhat, purring gently. But when, for example, he marches off on one of his lone inspections, his tail trails along the ground, and his ears are lowered. I have to admit, though, that I'd be twice as afraid without him. Yes, I know he's just a cat, but his instincts are sharper than mine, sharper than any man's, I'd venture. Here on the edge of the world, with only one's thoughts for company, you'd forgive a lone watchman for losing his marbles. But with a cat like Emery by one side, one might just be able to hold on to them. For a little while longer, anyway. I'm not looking forward to nightfall. Later. It's late. 11:36 p.m., according to my watch. No lights tonight. No creeping shadows. But there's a racket. Several strange noises, all of which, it would seem, are carried by the northerly wind to the quay, where, uncannily, they're able to penetrate the thick glass windows and stone walls in order to reach my ears. My feline companion is haunted by these sounds, on his haunches most of the time, yowling ceaselessly. And these sounds are unlike any I've ever heard before. There are bouts of dissonant melodies like the insane piping of church organs, uncanny cackles belonging to throats less than human and much less than animal, horribly suggestive clashes comparable to vast portions of glacial ice tumbling into the sea. Again, reluctantly, wanting desperately to attribute these things to my imagination, I'll make a note of the sounds in the watchman's logbook. Make a note with a pencil gripped by a trembling hand. And again, I'll omit to mention the gloom, the dread I feel. Those predecessors of mine who went mad, those who disappeared entirely, were they too haunted by the Isle of Leia? It would seem that that dark rock has it in for us, all of us. It sure as heck doesn't want me to get any sleep tonight. I suppose I'll just lie in bed, staring at the ceiling, glancing at the flickering lamp beside me, wrestling with Emery at my feet, wondering what it's all about, why the corporation is so secretive about it, until that infernal commotion ceases. Will it cease? Give me a break. April 23. No sun today, just grey, gloomy skies. The night was long. Emery and I were in and out of sleep, but the sounds eventually stopped just after 3 a.m., which at least put an end to our fretting. The routine continues. The fire is fed, Emery is fed. No appetite myself. Seen to the light, which, now I think about it, seems little more than an invitation to the inhabitants of the island, who or whatever they might be. A bright yellow eye that shines interminably, illuminating my small world day and night. I braved the main door again this morning, and am pleased to report that there were no new footprints waiting for me outside. So it's back to the watch, the endless watch. I'm by the north window as I write, throwing glances at the island, its sharp pinnacles resembling a silver crown, implying the existence of a giant beneath the frozen waters, a Goliath of the deep, waiting, patiently waiting, for the right moment to rise from the depths, to show its ghastly face to the world once more. My imagination is getting the better of me again. What do you think, Emery? Have I got it in me to sit this thing out? I'm losing myself here. A little walk wouldn't kill me. A stroll over to the island, to prove to myself that there's nothing out of the ordinary over there, nothing that's out to get me, nothing dangerous. It's like the corporation said, just as the advertisement for the position stated. Perform routine maintenance tasks to ensure the proper functioning of the lighthouse. Monitor and record observations of noteworthy events on the adjacent island. Keep detailed logs of weather conditions, etc. Noteworthy events, not strange or unusual events. It's quiet out there at the moment. The weather's been much the same since the blizzard of April 18. I'm going to go, in spite of your protests, Emery. Wish me luck. Later. I'm back, and in one piece, and I found something. I'll start at the beginning. I left the lighthouse at noon, and under the grey ceiling found myself traversing the bridge of ice, some 50 feet wide now. The cautious trudge took roughly an hour, guided by the looming island ahead of me. I swear, that place is much larger than it appears from the quay, sheer and oppressive, towering above you like a colossal fortress, impenetrable. The silence of the place dominates all. It's intimidating. Constantly I found myself looking over my shoulder, to the left and to the right, sensing eyes on me with every step. Reaching the island proper, I clambered up to the cliff face and saw that there were numerous cave mouths, one of which I discovered was large enough for me to crawl into. I hesitated only a moment before plunging headlong into that dark passageway, withdrawing my torch as I did so. I inched forward some 30 feet or so, before coming across the things which I thereby retrieved. A wool coat, heavily tarnished, and the water-stained remains of a journal, the name Brumley just about legible on the front cover. If there was a body back there somewhere, I was reluctant to look for it, for what I read on the few pages that remained intact persuaded me to leave immediately. As I said, I made it back unharmed, and with both the coat and journal in my possession. Rather than quote from it, I'll attach the untarnished pages to this journal, and add notes as appropriate. Brumley's Journal. The first of the three pages is partially water-stained, and so the legible portion of the page begins mid-sentence. Any other time of year, the climb would have been impossible, but I managed it just about. I reached a ledge and saw a narrow fissure in the rock that seemed to provide a safer route to higher ground. I took this route and found that I was climbing at a much gentler gradient, all the while moving further and further towards the center of the island. I must have climbed for several hours in this fashion, thankful that I brought a handful of snacks along with me for the journey. Not enough, mind, but better than nothing at all. I must be out of my mind, I thought, as I clambered up that sloping fracture. But that driving force, powerful and unrelenting, compelled me to continue. I mustn't turn back, I said over and... Further water damage at the bottom of the page renders the remainder of that paragraph illegible. The second of the three pages, however, is completely intact. It was as though I'd found myself standing in a vast courtyard, hemmed in by unearthly church steeples. Deep violet skies hung overhead. The silence was palpable. This was a spiritual place, I thought, and assuredly the very top and center of the strange isle. In the middle of the space, a good 300 feet from my position at the top of the stairs, stood a small structure, clearly man-made, resembling a mausoleum. I went towards the structure, all the while paying close attention to my surroundings, desolate and quiet as they were. I had the feeling that the towering spires were manned by watchmen, their purpose not dissimilar to mine. But, unlike me, these men hadn't abandoned their posts and would soon raise the alarm, alerting the dwellers of this place to my presence. But no sounds followed, no cries, no horns, just the dead silence that had haunted me from the very moment I set foot on the island. The third and final page is water-stained towards the end, but I think enough can be gleaned from it regardless. When at last I reached the small structure, I saw that it could be nothing else but a mausoleum. The word Lair, being the name of the island, was etched in bold lettering above a huge stone door, on either side of which broad columns supported a surprisingly plain, hip roof. And then, as the last vestiges of light faded above, the stone door swung open inexplicably, and from the darkness beyond rushed a ghastly stench, filling my nostrils and forcing me backwards. A maniacal cackle sounded from that hitherto silent structure, the very same sibilant shrieking I'd heard night after night at the lighthouse, the cries of the king, awakened once more to drink of the human body. My nightmares come to life. I turned and fled, saw the watchmen, my predecessors, descending from the spires like deflated, desiccated. End of journal. What can be made of this? It's eerie, but it makes for fascinating reading. Could there really be a mausoleum at the center of the island? If so, who or what is the thing that lies within? Ostensibly quite alive. I wish I could say that Bramley's account was nothing more than the result of a fever dream. But I, too, have heard things, seen things. Emery is wise to it, too. How the remains of my predecessor came to be in the darkness of that cave, I am unable to surmise. But I don't like it. Don't like it one bit. The corporation must know about it. They've known about it from the very first. But still, I'm baffled. Observations are one thing. But what if this thing comes after me? I've no means to sound the alarm, no means of escape. What are we to do, Emery? The cat has nothing to say on the matter. But he's very vocal about Brumley's coat. Can't blame him, really. It stinks. April 24. Another strangely silent night. Like a night in the void. Slept better, though. Emery seems all right, since throwing that coat out, that is. Watched me do it, too. We could do without the smell of death in here. In spite of all I've experienced, the routine continues. Feed the fire, feed Emery, feed myself, survey the light. Nothing out of the ordinary today. Glum. Later. Emery knew it was going to happen before it happened. He approached me, yowled quietly. He was afraid. Didn't need to learn cat speak to sense that. And then I heard it. Three solid raps at the door downstairs. Like the waters outside, I froze, eye to eye with a trembling Emery. A space of several seconds passed. And then the raps sounded again. Three distinct knocks. My head whirled. A thousand thoughts flashed through my mind. Had a slender-footed being come once again to my door? I went to the north window, tried to get a glimpse of who or what might be out there. But it was dark outside, not helped by the overhanging balcony above that threw the lower portions of the lighthouse into shadow. The rap sounded again. Bracing myself for the cold, I climbed the ladder that leads to the balcony and pushed open the hatch. Without my furs, the cold was almost unbearable, numbing my extremities, poking at my eyes. But I meant to be outside only briefly. I made my way to the railing and peered over the edge into the gloom below. I thought I caught sight of a shape in the darkness, but I couldn't be sure. Back through the hatch I went, and down into the watchroom. Emery was yowling again, and rushed over to me the moment he saw me. The raps came again, and I was left with a simple choice: ignore the mysterious caller, or answer the summons. And yet I managed to conjure up a third option, and made my hesitant way downstairs, intending to listen by the door, to somehow determine the nature of the call, without opening it. With all the stealth I could muster, I crept towards the door, and placed my ear up against it. It's a large, metal door, and weatherproof, designed to withstand the most brutal of blizzards, so I was fairly confident in its ability to offer protection from whatever lurked without. But with that heavy object between me and the outside world, little could be heard, other than the faint and familiar whistle of the Arctic wind. Suddenly, the rap sounded again, frightening me half to death. "Hello?" I called without thought, my heart in my mouth. And dimly, very dimly, I heard an answering voice. "Let me in," the voice called, an empty voice. "Who are you?" "I'm cold." "Who are you?" I repeated. "It's cold out here." "Answer the question." "Cold without my coat." I froze at that. Brumley was out there. But that simply couldn't be. If the specter of the dead watchman was out there and he wanted his coat, he'd have to go searching for it on the ice. "Who are you?" I called again, nervously. But no further responses followed. I retreated, terrified. Emery was waiting for me in the watchroom, yowling like a cat possessed. I comforted him the best I could, shivering from head to toe. The ghosts of the island were closing in, emboldened somehow. Could a door, a simple metal door of the material world, really prevent their intrusion? Nothing has happened since, but I think my feline companion and I are at the end of our tethers. I'm not sure how much more we're able to take. April 29. Days have passed without incident. The routine has continued. I've risen at dawn, kept the fire burning. Emery and I are well fed. The light continues to shine. I've been over these journal entries in the watchman's logbook a dozen times, wondering if it wasn't just a dream, barring the salvaged papers of Brumley, that is. Emery seems his usual pleasant self, happy to just eat and lounge about, as is a cat's prerogative. But I'm not so settled. There's an atmosphere of expectation, like hidden forces are mounting against us, gathering the will and means necessary to take the lighthouse and its occupants. If so, this could be the end for me and my feline companion. If, after all, I'm not imagining all of this. Imagination is a powerful thing, especially when it's all a man has left, isolated in a barren place, trapped by the elements, stuck in repetition. But I'm quite sane. I know this only too well. I'd welcome madness at this stage, I think. Madness, at least, is served with a chance of recovery. If only the promise of adequate compensation was enough to get me through. How am I to endure another 8 weeks? Later. The end is near. They're coming. I'm by the north window, Emery at my feet, quivering. Under the light of the aurora, the king approaches. He's a mass of color, sometimes liquid, at other times solid, taking the form of a giant, like the Jötnar of the Norse. His shrieks penetrate this humble lighthouse, ghastly proclamations of intent. Behind the king trail the slender-footed shadows of men, looking to my squinting eyes like emaciated corpses. Bromley is among them. I can just about make out his distinctive wool coat. Must have found it, after all. It's a nightmare procession, a fleet of ghouls commanded by a spectral monarch. They advance so slowly. Why do you tease me, my king? Be merciful and plunge thy blade deep into my breast. And yet still, the ethereal army creeps and crawls. Slender feet trample the ice. Their shimmering leader conducts them like the shriveled members of a dead orchestra. The king's music is dissonant and terrible, not meant for the ears of men. Surely it was composed for hell's welcome ceremony. The watch is over. No longer can I gaze on a spectacle such as this. My head hurts, my limbs ache. Must find a way to keep them out. Thoughts on paper won't save me, nor you, Emery. But wait, there's a rapping at the door. It's coming in threes, just as it did before. 'Tis a sound I just cannot ignore. What will I do about these things at my door? Later. They're inside. I've barricaded the door to the watchroom. Emery and I are cowering by the stove. I thought about setting fire to the fuel in the store, but I can't get to it now. The king and his followers have brought their maddening music to the lighthouse and mean to take the cat and me, by any means possible, back to the island, to that courtyard at its center, overlooked by the lofty cathedral spires, into the blackness of his unholy mausoleum. To what ultimate end I dread to think. They're at the door now, dozens of lumbering forms, hammering with withered fists, the serpentine shadow of the king at their backs, urging them on. I hear the splintering of wood. The cat is at his wit's end. It's over. What can be done against such things? This mysterious king and his acolytes of darkness. What else is there to say? I'm sorry, Emery. If somebody finds this journal, I beg of you, demolish the lighthouse, abandon the watch. We don't belong here. Don't come looking for me, for my feline companion and I are bound for the island, to be drained by the king, desiccated, turned to prunes.
Hello, ladies and gents. Ian here. Be sure to pop on over to our YouTube channel or Facebook page for regular updates. If you'd like to support our work, please consider taking a look at our Patreon or Bandcamp pages, or search for us on Audible. You'll find links to everything on our website, horrorbabble.com/links.